Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, I will be talking about a stock that I came across while going through the Japan Company Handbook, and that stock is called DecoCon, which is an independent port transporter. Today, we'll briefly go over the company's business, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on the key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review DecoCon. Hey guys, let's start off by quickly going over the About section of DecoCon. DecoCon is primarily engaged in imported and exported cargo handling business and steel logistics business. The company operates in three business segments. The imported and exported cargo handling segment, which engages in the customer clearance, transportation, and storage of imported and exported goods, such as food, steel, non-ferrous metals, chemical, industrial goods, machineries, and daily goods. The second business segment is the steel logistics segment, which engages in cargo handling, storage, and delivery of domestic steel products. And finally, the other segment engages in harbor transportation, other domestic logistics operations, warehouse operations, real estate leasing, and others. According to the Japan Company Handbook, about 84% of its consolidated sales comes from its export and import cargo segment, about 7% of its consolidated sales comes from its steel segment, and about 9% of its consolidated sales comes from its other segment. Now let's go over the company's fundamentals. We'll focus on its key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at DecoCon. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue was about 18 billion yen. And for the year 2021, it was about 22.2 billion yen. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has slowly been trending upwards. Next, looking at the gross margin. The gross margin is what's left with the company once it has paid for its cost of goods. Over the past 10 years, the company's gross margin has hovered in the 20% range. What that means is every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, it had $20 left to pay off its other expenses and make profit. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is what we get when we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about 522 million yen, and for the year 2021, it was about 782 million yen. Similar to the trend that we see with the company's revenue, the company's operating income over the past 10 years has slowly been trending upwards as well. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about 251 million yen, and for the year 2021, it was about 580 million yen. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has slowly been trending upwards and has stayed fairly consistent over the past few years. We can see that every year for the past 10 years, the company always reported a positive net income number, which tells us that the company has always been profitable over the past 10 years. After that, looking at the dividends per share, back in 2012, the company paid out about 7 yen per share as dividend. And for the year 2021, it paid out about 13 yen per share as dividend. Over the past 10 years, the company has always paid out dividends, which is certainly something that we want to see as shareholders, as we want to invest in companies that is regular at paying out dividends, as that's a way for us shareholders to get our money back that we have invested in the company. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had 9 million shares outstanding, and that number has remained the same for the trailing 12 months. Over the past 10 years, the company has not issued more shares, and that is something that we want to see as shareholders, as when a company issues more shares, it actually dilutes the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. So the fact that the company has not issued more shares is good news for existing shareholders. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. So it is the company's equity portion of the balance sheet. Back in 2012, the company's book value per share was about 350 yen. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about 104.5 yen. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive and has been increasing. The fact that it has been positive tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. And the fact that it's increasing tells us that the company's proportion of its assets to its liabilities is increasing. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was about 228 million yen, and for the year 2021, it was about 920 million yen. Ideally, we want to invest in companies that have a free cash flow that's positive, staying steady or increasing. And we can see that with DecoCon, the company's free cash flow has been positive ever since 2015 and has been increasing. I will be using the average of the past 4 years of free cash flows for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin.
The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was about 1.39%, and for the year 2021, it was about 2.61%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in the year 2021, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $2.61 left as pure profit. Ideally, we want to see a company's net margin number to be high, as that tells us that the company has leeway with its pricing structure and can absorb additional expenses and still be profitable. However, in the case of Daito-Kon, we can see that the company has pretty razor-thin net margin. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that had a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2012, the company's return on equity was about 7.71%, and for the year 2021, it was about 8.87%. We can see that ever since 2013, the company's return on equity has been greater than 8%. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Back in 2012, the company's interest coverage was at 14 times, and for the year 2021, it's about 68 times. Now let's look at the financial health of the company. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5. A current ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company has enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was at 1.5, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.07. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 1.30, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.46. The company's quick ratio every year for the past 10 years has been greater than 1.0. Daito-Kon's current and quick ratios over the past 10 years indicate that the company was never in a liquidity bind, and it always had enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage ratio tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 2.67, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.74. The company's financial leverage has been decreasing every year since 2013. Next, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio. This ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.30, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.12. Both the financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios point out that the company has not overextended itself, and its liabilities and its debt is in control. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sale to the date it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was at 54.57 days, and for the year 2021, it was about 53.58 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing, and we can see that for majority of the past 10 years, the company's day sales outstanding has hovered in the 50-day range. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Daito-Kon's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2012, that number was 5.42 days, and for the year 2021, it was about 10.21 days. The company's day's inventory number has slowly been trending upwards. Ideally, we want the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing. And what this means is the company was more efficient with its inventory 10 years ago than it is today. Next is the payables period. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company took about 41.35 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2021, it was about 32.64 days. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing, and we can see that over the past 10 years, the company's payables period has hovered in the 30 to 40 day range. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives an idea of how many times does the company go through its inventory in a calendar year. Back in 2012, the company went through its inventory about 67.34 times, and for the year 2021, it was about 35.73 times. Ideally, we want to see the company's inventory turnover to be staying steady or increasing, and we can see that over the past few years, the company's inventory turnover has stayed consistent, However, looking at the past 10 years, we can see that the company was more efficient at going through its inventory 10 years ago than it is today. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Datacon has a PE of 8.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 24.1. The company's price-to-book is at 0.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.3. The company's price-to-sales is at 0.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.0. The company's price-to-cash flow is at 4.9, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.2. And finally, the dividend yield. Datacon has a dividend yield of 2.2%, whereas S&P 500 is at 1.5%. So we can see that on all these valuation metrics, Datacon is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for Datacon. Over here, I pasted the average of the past 4 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar, which came out to about 626 million yen. I'm assuming an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 5%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 3%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 3%. The company has 9 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of 954 million yen. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about 1,051 yen per share. When we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about 599 yen per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 43% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about 4,890 million yen. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all these up to get the company's intrinsic value to be about 10 billion yen. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about 1,051 yen per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Datacon is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about 437 yen per share. And finally, if we disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that Datacon is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for the company to even worry about paying its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about 1,157 yen per share. Overall, Datacon is an undervalued security. The company has strong fundamentals and is undervalued not only from a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis standpoint, but also from a book value standpoint. The company's president owns about 3.5% of the shares outstanding, so we know that the management has a vested interest in the company. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Datacon interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which Japanese stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.